Welcome to another episode of the Pastor's Call podcast. I'm your host, Joel Webb. Before we begin today's episode, I want to thank the sponsor for the show. It's Blue Water Free Methodist Church, where I have the pleasure of serving. We're an intentional community reflecting Jesus to our world. I also want to thank Refresh Digital Services, who produces and edits this podcast. Well, today I am excited to have joining me Joshua Peace. He is the pastor at The Porch Church, just south of Denver, Colorado. So thank you so much for joining me, Josh.
Man, it's a pleasure to be on here.
Well, let's just get right into it. Just tell us a little bit about who you are, your background, and what you felt your call into the ministry was.
Yeah. As far as who I am, I'll start with that. And then my call into the ministry, I might go a little bit of a different direction when I get that, because I think I have an angle that might be a little bit unique to my story. But in terms of who I am, I grew up with a dad who was in pastoral ministry on and off throughout my life, had a largely good experience with all of that. I was a journalism and political science major in college and was not planning to go into ministry, and then kind of had some experiences toward the tail end of college that actually redirected my path toward that. I've been married to my wife, Christina. We've been married for 13 years coming up in like 3 weeks. I got a 9 and a 7-year-old, both boys. And and I've been in my current role at The Porch for almost 3 years. It'll be 3 years in August. But when I said I kind of wanted to go a little bit different in how I answered this question. So I think what's more interesting about my story, like my call into ministry is like probably somewhat similar. I think what's more interesting is how I left ministry and then got back into it. I left a church in Los Angeles that I was working for under some fairly painful circumstances and moved to Colorado with my family and was a freelance writer. I was a journalism major, I mentioned. So I was a freelance writer and was trying to make a living just supporting my family that way. And accidentally backed my way in, which sounds weird, but it is kind of what it felt like. I backed my way in to being an investigative journalist who was covering sexual abuse in evangelical or like fundamentalist institutions. So I ended up writing an article that was in the Washington Post that was like when the Me Too movement was kind of hitting Hollywood. It was an article basically saying it's probably coming for evangelical church world next, and we don't know how bad it's going to be, but it looks like it's probably going to be pretty bad. And then it was, and then wrote for like the New Republic and Christianity Today and Relevant Magazine, covering things like Hybels and Willow Creek and all sorts of different stuff. And that combined with, I realize that your listeners are going to be in different places on this, but for my story, the 2016 election was really tough for me because I was interviewing women who had been abused in church situations and were told, well, that was a man of God. You must be wrong. You must be imagining it. Maybe it's all made up, or he's too important to fail, basically. And I was watching as the one of our presidential nominees at that time was caught on tape bragging about sexually assaulting women and was being told, well, he's like King David. It's not that big of a deal. We just need to forgive him and move on. It was the exact same message. And I just couldn't handle it. I couldn't handle the way I saw people, like major evangelical leaders, kind of like writing off what I thought, what I believe to be an inexcusable reality. And so that combined with all the different, like I'm neck deep in all these different stories of all the ways that churches have hurt people. And I kind of got to a moment where I'm like, God, I don't think I have it in me not to believe in you, but your plan for the church was a dumb plan and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And you should have come up with something better because this is nonsense. And there were several things that kind of brought me back from that. And it kind of happened slowly, but like the big one was when COVID hit. I lost every stream of income that I'd spent years building up. And the things that kept me and my family going were government safety net programs and the local church. Hmm. It was local churches that were doing food banks and rent assistance and like our home church where the pastor knew about our situation and connected us with an anonymous person who basically bought Christmas presents for our kids. Hmm. And I started realizing that when you're looking at the church from a 35,000 foot view, all that you can see is the awful. And the best things that churches are doing is anonymous and quiet and humble. And that's probably why they're still good, is because they're anonymous and quiet and humble. And I realized, like, I want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of building a church that is anonymous and quiet and humble, but trying to do the good, hard work of being God's kingdom as best as we know how. Mm-hmm. And so I started applying for ministry jobs and then landed the job that I'm in now. I've been doing it for almost 3 years. Hmm.
So kind of bringing back kind of maybe, and this will include some jumping around, you know, obviously a focus in journalism and writing and whatnot. Did you have any kind of theological elements in and through there as well that contributed to some of that?
To the writing?
To the writing, and then kind of in your lead up coming into pastoral roles as well.
Yeah. So in terms of a lot of the writing that I was doing prior to the investigative journalism stuff, I was writing for websites that mm-hmm. was like kind of like news content for church leaders and stuff like that. I think my faith had always, like, my faith in Jesus has always been pretty central mm-hmm. To my writing. I think for me, I realized, like, as early as like second grade, I had people starting to say, like, you're a good writer. And for me, it became a place of self-expression where I felt mm-hmm. both like I'm able to articulate all the craziness in my head. I can get it out in like clear order. And also people tell me I do good, and that feels good. So I'm just going to chase the high of both. Like, I feel like I'm created for this. I have to make sense of things in my head mm-hmm. and I get rewarded for it. But as I started, even in my early ministry roles, like I was at a church, a youth pastor at a church in Texas, like I would write like discipleship curriculum and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And so writing has kind of always dovetailed. Mm-hmm. It dovetailed really nicely with ministry because so much of ministry is the ability to articulate abstract thoughts in a clear manner, hopefully.
Yeah. And so I want to even back up even further than, you know, because it's called the pastor's call. And, you know, one of the things that I've discovered just through talking through people, there's kind of three ways that people have discovered their call. There's kind of the lightning bolt moment, kind of Martin Luther-esque. Like, yes, I'll do it. You know, I feel this is what I'll do. There's a growing conviction over someone's life where just over a period of time, they feel like this is where God's leading. And then there's situational where it's just like, oh, we need a pastor. You're it. Welcome to the role. So, you know, maybe could you share your story of that, your feeling of that call and what that looked like for you?
Yeah, no, I'd be happy to. And thanks for circling back around to that. So for me, it was, I was doing a internship in Atlanta, Georgia that was like, had to do with like politics and some stuff like that. But I was a part of this small group. It was like a college small group, but it was like nothing I'd really ever seen before. And it was really compelling. And like just what was happening both at the small group and then at the church that it was a part of. It was like the first time I'd seen like a large church, but that like there was a sense of like excitement when you walked in, like, I wonder what God's going to do today. And then there was a small group where we would stick around afterwards and like pray for like an hour, and like half the people would stick around to do that. I'm like, well, this is pretty cool. And it woke up something in me, an imagination, I think, about like what the church could be and an excitement for it. So I came back, but I had no intention. That didn't change my, like, my plan for my career at all. And so I came back to finish at Houston Baptist University, home of the Mighty Huskies. And to finish my journalism political science degree, and the church, like the small, like really small kind of house church community that I was a part of, basically disbanded while I was gone. And I had to find a new church. And in the process of that, I started a prayer group that would meet in my apartment on campus once a week. And through that, some stuff that God was doing in my own life, I was reading this book that was just really like having a big impact on my life at the time. And so I was like sharing some of the stuff I was learning with other people, and I discovered I had a pretty decent gift at like being able to sense what God might be up to in mm-hmm. people's lives and kind of maybe pointing them in a direction that would be hopeful or healing or encouraging. And I had this thought of like, you know, like I always knew I'd be super involved in the church. Why have I never considered doing this as like a career? And I'm like, I don't know, but maybe I should do that. And so I started asking people, and I remember one guy told me, like, yeah, I was kind of wondering when you're going to realize that. And I'm like, all right. And so that started, it was around December that I really made that decision of like, I think I'm supposed to go do this. And I graduated in May and somehow landed a job as the associate student pastor at a church the following July, which I don't recommend anyone go that path. That wasn't the smart path, but it worked out. At the time, I just felt like, oh, well, this is clearly what God wants me to do. I'm just going to go do that. Like, I'm sure it'll be fine. Now looking back, I'm like, man, that was crazy, but it did.
Yeah. And it, you know, and that's just how God works for each individual person, you know, the places he leads and takes us is where we need to go for that time. So, But definitely sounds like that growing conviction and realization. And it's amazing how other people notice that first. And then, you know, even sometimes before we realize that. So I kind of want to join a couple elements together. I'd love for you to share a little bit about what your ministry looks like at The Porch, maybe share a little bit more about the church, but then also kind of tie in maybe for those pastors who are in churches that have had really kind of unhealthy, toxic pasts, or they're in a time of transition wanting to become healthy, especially, you know, with, and, you know, kind of that speciality, especially with you dealing with, you know, the sexual abuse that's happened in a lot of evangelical churches. But what does that look like in active ministry for churches to be healthy, be honest, be open? Because it can be a hard wake up call for churches to realize we actually haven't been. And so maybe what does that also look like practically? You know, not just kind of the big picture, this is what we need to do, but like practically, what are some of the steps for pastors and churches in those situations?
Jeez, man. Yeah, I mean, that's good. That opened like five files in my brain. So I'll start. The first thing you asked was, you know, describe the church I'm at right now. And I would say that like, it's nothing, there's nothing about it that you're going to look at and be like, whoa, this is so different than anything I've ever seen before. I would say that what I'm proud of about our church though, is there are two things. There are two things that when I came into this job that were important to me. And the first one was, if the church is supposed to be a countercultural force in our world, if there's this idea, and I tend to shy away from this language, honestly, but if we have this idea of like, man, there's a secular world out there and we're trying to be like this refuge or whatever, I think we tend to think about the wrong things when we think those things. For instance, we live in a world that's wall to wall noise and busyness. And yet in the Bible, we have commands like be still and know that I am God. What does it look like for us to be still in an incredibly noisy and chaotic world? Well, it probably doesn't mean having church services that have been planned within an inch of their life to create wall to wall noise with no gaps and no pauses. And again, I don't want to say that like if you're doing that, that's bad or wrong. That's not my point. It's more of like, for me, part of like our call to be countercultural is to create a little more quiet and stillness. And so we'll pause during our services and just have like a minute where I'm just like, let's just be still and like take some deep breaths in and out and just focus that God is here with us right now and invite God to speak and do whatever he wants to do. Because I think we have to train people how to do that. I don't think we know. I think it's very, very hard. Actually, it's hard for me to be still. And so part of our church is creating in all of our spaces, whether it's small groups or whether it's our weekend service or our retreats that we do, it's like that a big part of it is just like, let's learn how to be still and just be and experience peace and rest, because that is deeply countercultural and hard. I think another thing that we do, and this is, again, this is just kind of, this is less a strategy and more just flowing out of who I am and what God's done in me over the last several years, is I work really hard at trying to speak a language that invites, even if we're not directly saying this is what we're doing, I try to be very conversant in speaking a language that invites people who have been very hurt and wounded by religion, that communicates that this is a safe place. One of the things is going to say, like, you know, whether this is your first time here, you've been coming from a while, and whether you've been doing this whole following Jesus thing all your life, or you're like just checking out God-based church for like the first time or the first time in forever, it's like, this is a safe place for you to take your next step toward God, whatever that next step's going to be. And then we actually have to like live that out and like talk in a way that is designed to communicate, this is a safe place to have questions. This is a safe place to not have things figured all out. This is a place in which we are really in. If you look on our website, it's going to say everyone gets to be near Jesus. And that's really what we try to model, is we want to make space for everyone to be near Jesus and then to let Jesus be the one that helps you figure out what it is that you need to be and do. And so there's like an open-handedness that we try to model with all of that. And then I would also say, and this is again, just kind of flowing out of my convictions, is we talk pretty honestly about cultural moments that are happening in our world and trying to model a way that's a little less enslaved to one political party and trying to speak about how God's kingdom probably can show up in a lot of different cultural areas, and that our job is not to, like, so we have a benediction we say at the end of every service, and part of it is like, may you remember that Jesus is not the property of any political party, and that we are to love our neighbor which includes those we passionately disagree with. Mm-hmm. And we want to be that kind of church culture, because I think that's ridiculously important in mm-hmm. a world in which we're becoming more and more defined by political tribes. And so trying to actively break that kind of stuff mm-hmm. down. In terms of the other part of your question, though, because you asked, like, how do we, you know, develop churches that are a safe place, and how do pastors do that? You kind of touched on this, man, and it's important, is what worries me sometimes, and I think most pastors, this is not their heart, but what worries me sometimes when I see, like, I don't know, Twitter or other things that aren't real, is that, like, when it comes to, like, deconstruction, mm-hmm. I see a hostile, aggressive tone that church leaders take toward people who are in, like, would identify and being some version of a deconstruction movement. And I think that's mm-hmm. ridiculously unhelpful. I think it's born out of defensiveness, maybe born out of insecurity, mm-hmm. because all of us as pastors don't know what we're doing. We don't want to say that, but we don't know what we're doing. And we're barely, it's a hard job, and we're scared that we're doing it wrong. And I think so often we see deconstruction movements and things like that, and it feels like a threat. And I don't see it as a threat whatsoever. What I see it as is a logical outflowing of a massive amount of harm that has been done in mm-hmm. religious cultures. And that the way, if it's like, if people were harmed deeply by churches and religions, and so many people have been in very legitimate ways, then the way that they respond to that is going to be messy. It's going to be all over the map. And there are some people who are going to leave the church in it. And it's like, it's easy to look at them and be like, well, this is your problem. I'm like, well, we're the ones that did it, though. Mm-hmm. We're the ones that created the harm. We can't be surprised when out of harm comes a lot of hurt that's, like, expressing itself in a lot of different ways. And I think our job as church leaders is not to have a defensive posture to that, but to try to empathize and understand. Mm-hmm. And what frustrates me sometimes is that as I see people who have large platforms, who are pastors, who have a very antagonistic approach that they take towards those kind of things. And I think our first job, if we genuinely want to create space, and this is even more important as we're looking at how each generation is less and less interested in churches, their Christian churches are being perceived less and less with every generation as a place that is offering spiritual truth. That if we are going to break that, it is not going to be by being defensive and telling people all the reasons that they're idiots. They already got that message. That's why they left. Mm-hmm. Our job is to empathize and try to understand what they've experienced. And then after we've done that relationally over time, point to how Jesus offers something better. And I would say, well, some of the most powerful conversations that I have had have been with people who have been deeply, deeply wounded by terrible religious experiences. And as a pastor, I've said to them, I believe you. I'm so sorry that that happened. And if it means anything to you at all, on behalf of all churches and all Christianity, I apologize. I'm so sorry. Could you, and I don't even ask for forgiveness, because I don't know if that's the right thing to ask in those moments, but just to say, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Like those, that kind of, if we can show up with those sorts of hearts as people who are leading in churches, that immediately begins to heal wounds and hurts mm-hmm. that have happened. And then I think it's living out that, it's creating church cultures and everything that we do that reinforce that. And mm-hmm. so that means that as leaders, we have to genuinely make space for people to ask questions and to not agree and to be in different places, which is really challenging. And I don't mm-hmm. think we have that all figured out. We're very much in the process of trying to figure that out. But that, what I've just expressed, I think it's that heart for mm-hmm. us as pastors, that we really begin by recognizing that maybe people aren't just trying to be rebellious and leave so that they can do whatever it is they want to do, that maybe they actually have experienced a lot of hurt and pain, and that our job, if you look at Jesus, he does a really good job. With the religious leaders, he shows up pretty harsh at first. Mm-hmm. But with people who have been hurt by religion, who have been piled, have had rules and expectations and pressures mm-hmm. piled on them, for the people who are the outcasts societally because they've been told, well, you must be sick like that because you're a sinner, mm-hmm. he shows up with compassion and kindness and mercy. And it's like, what would it look like for us to show up with those kind of hearts to the people who have been hurt? Mm-hmm.
Wow. No, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And I hope there's some tangible things, you know, myself coming from a background where, you know, there certainly has been a lot of harm done, and walking through that process for myself and with others, seeing the impact that just saying, I'm sorry for what has happened. Even apologizing on behalf of people that might never apologize themselves. But it's that posture. even throughout like the Gospel of Luke, you know, before many of Jesus's miracles, it says he was filled with compassion.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And, you know, ironically, when I first heard that, it was in a Bible class at a Bible school that didn't actually practice that. Yeah. Ironically, but that's always stuck with me. And you know, that compassion knit fill, being filled with compassion is essential, essential to that. And so appreciate you, going into that a little bit and sharing. So in this cultural moment, especially with all of these elements with that particular within the evangelical church, what do you see, as challenges then for pastors moving forward, in the coming years from your perspective, Josh, in 2024, as maybe like hurdles that pastors who are coming into ministry might need to be aware of, just to understand what's going on.
Man, yeah. Well, if it's someone coming into ministry, first of all, if you're listening to this and you're wanting to come into ministry, what I would actually say would be like, man, let me love you and encourage you and be like a source of hope and encouragement for you one-on-one. It's like, because like, I would want to start with that. And everything I'm about to say is probably not going to track with that, but I just want people to hear. First of all, what I would want you to know is if you're anyone who's listening to this, who's in pastoral ministry, is like, it's a hard job, but it's worth it. And so much good comes out from faithfully doing it, but it is hard. And so I would even say, it's like, if there's anyone listening to this that ever just needs a safe place to vent, it's like, I don't have all the answers, but I'm happy to listen to any pastors that I can be of a blessing or a service to them. But, oh, challenges. Yeah. I think central to the model of how most of our churches work is an attractional. People are probably looking for some sort of spiritual answers, and they probably at some point in time will try to find it in a church somewhere. And so we have to be the church that has a good enough branding and a good enough, you know, kind of like presence in our community or in our area to attract those people. And then we'll grow, and then we can hire staff, and then we grow more and hire more staff. The challenge that I think, and I don't have answers to any of these things, by the way, I think with Gen Z, and it looks like maybe with Gen Alpha, we are going to be raising the first fully post-Christian generation. And they do not think that churches are a place of spiritual truth and relevance. And I think that is going to have massive impact on our church models. My guess is that bivocational ministry is going to become increasingly more common. I think mega churches are going to be less and less common. And I think we are going to have to figure out, there's a saying, a phrase that I heard a while ago in a different context, but it applies here too, which is that the loss of privilege feels like persecution. And the church has been in an incredibly privileged position in American society and culture. I think in some ways that was actually bad for the church, but we had a place of privilege. We had a place where our belief systems were the most common. They were the most highly thought of. There was a time where if you were going to be president, and really this is kind of sort of still true, if you want to be president, you have to at least give lip service to some sort of Christianity, that there is a place where there's the expectation. If you think about like the 1950s image of like the family that dresses up in their Sunday clothes and goes to church and all that, we're still living in that model. It's just the generational versions of it has shifted, but it's still basically that premise. And I think it's done. And we just don't know it yet, because people like me are still reaching millennials like me and maybe upper end Gen Z people a little bit. But I think what we're going to find is that when it comes to anyone who's like, let's say 26 or younger, that we are going to have to start radically speaking a whole new language, because these people did not grow up in church. They do not have religious memories or traditions that they're returning to. When they have kids, their first thought isn't going to be, well, maybe we need to get back into church to give them some sort of religious education, which is what has happened for the past several decades in church growth. I don't know if that's going to keep happening or not. And I think what we as churches, and I'm saying this convicting myself because I don't think I'm doing any of these things, but I think we as churches are going to have to figure out how to build bridges to a generation that does not speak the language of Christianity. We can't assume that they know the story of Noah and the Ark or Adam and Eve and all that stuff. Those are cultural memories that are slowly fading. And I think that the speed of that's going to be happening more rapidly. We also are having to do that at a time where church institutions need to start reckoning, and are to some extent reckoning, with the fact that maybe the charismatic leader model is horribly flawed and done immense damage, because someone who has a ton of charisma, is really good with people, has a lot of high energy, and has a great speaking skill, can build churches quickly and be celebrated, and it has nothing to do with their character, has nothing to do with their inner world, or whether they even really are much like Jesus, because we're in a culture that really, really loves to glorify charisma and skill set. And that's not just a church, that's everywhere. But it's a I think it's a uniquely American thing, even in some ways, because we're a culture that really likes success and big and growth. It's built into capitalism in a way. And I think we have to reckon with the fact that that's done immense damage in our churches, that it's actually nowhere in the Bible to be found, that those are the kind of leaders we should be holding up. That we maybe need to have cultures where there's not, like, we still in so many places have, like, the pastor who is the expert CEO, the expert communicator, the expert visionary, the expert counselor, and who's good at all those things. And the reality is none of us are good at those things, like all of them. We're good at a couple of them, and we fake it in the rest. It puts a lot of pressure on us to feel like we know everything, we have all the answers, we have it all figured out, when really what we need to be doing is creating a place where multiple people's gifts and voices are raised and not just one person's. And so I think building those sort of both those are the two biggest challenges and they basically are all rooted around the fundamental way that we think about building churches. With a few exceptions, there might be some churches who keep managing to pull it off in, like, really condensed urban areas, but that I think for most of us, that might need to change quick.
Wow. No, thank you for going into that and sharing that. You know, I know there's a lot of challenging things in there, but, you know, the reality is that, you know, the truth is challenging, especially when it confronts us. And, you know, the church has an opportunity very similar to the early church in the fact that they're dealing with a culture that doesn't have any understanding of the faith. And, you know, I think especially in our postmodern moment that we're moving towards and that we're already well into, you know, the gospel has an amazing opportunity to change people's lives who are truly staring nihilism in the face.
And here's what I would say, man. Like, again, if there are younger pastors that are listening to this, or people who are in seminary or considering a call to ministry, man, here's what I would say is, like, we need you because you speak the language of this generation. I'm 43 years old, and I'm feeling, it doesn't sound old to some people, I know. I feel my cultural irrelevance creeping up on me so fast. Like, yeah, I know Taylor Swift, Olivia Rodrigo, I barely know anything about her. And so, like, there is, like, the movies and the art and the way of thinking and just even, like, how you were raised and what it was like to have a smartphone in your hand from the moment you were 3 years old. I didn't have any of that stuff. Yeah. And so, the younger listeners, you have the ability to speak a cultural language. And what I would say to you is, do not be beholden to the models that you have grown up in. We need people to lead in new ways. And if you're feeling like a little bit of a discontent or a little bit of a question of, like, I'm not sure that I just want to replicate some of the other things I would see, it's like maybe God has given you, is starting to prompt something in you to find new expressions and new ways. Because honestly, those of us who are middle-aged and older who are pastors, we need you. I feel like at best, I'm a bridge to whatever is coming next, but we're not it. We need people to articulate the gospel in new ways in the cultural moment that's coming.
Well, and I'm 29 years old, and I already feel that gap, you know, the last of the kind of pre-high-speed internet all the time generation. So I certainly feel that. Well, thank you for sharing that.
I didn't even have the internet until like 10th or 11th grade, man. Imagine that.
Well, there's a Charles Spurgeon quote I love. He talks about living in the Bible, but reading many good books, and through the power of the Holy Spirit, God's word has changed and transformed our lives. But what have been some of those other good books that you've just enjoyed and appreciated, fiction or nonfiction?
In terms of, like, what I'm recently working through, there's a book called Lamb of the Free by Andrew Rillera. I've never tried to say his name out loud. R-I-L-L-E-R-A. And it's basically something that's looking at, I'm going to go nerd world here for a second, but it's basically looking at atonement theory and asking if maybe we have misunderstood, like, the idea of penal substitutionary atonement being the only way to understand atonement, that actually maybe we've misread both what sacrifices were in the Old Testament and then what the New Testament writers mean when they're reflecting back on the sacrifices of the Old Testament. That our idea of, like, Well, then it was like you sacrificed the animals so that God wouldn't be mad and smite you because the blood of the animal is covering up your sin. But that might not actually be something that was what those sacrifices were, and that was not how they were understood by the Hebrew people. And so if that's the case, maybe that changes, like when we understand what Jesus's salvation means, that maybe this idea of like his blood being shed so that God's wrath was poured out on him instead of everyone else, maybe there's another way of looking at that that might feel a little less like there's an angry God waiting to like smite us. I found that to be really helpful and good. There, an old one, but a good one is, I really, really like C.S. Lewis's, oh my gosh, how did I just blank on the name? Oh no, this is terrible. I'm going to like Google C.S. Lewis books really quick.
Mere Christianity, Screwtape Letters.
This is awful.
Grief Observed, Four Loves, Abolition of Man.
These are all so good, and they're not the one I'm thinking of. It's the one where, oh my gosh, it's the one where he's describing basically heaven and hell, and he describes hell as like a sort of this like barren wasteland, and that people can take buses up into heaven.
I believe that's that might be the Abolition of Man. I think it is.
Anyway. And so I really like that book, which feel free to Google that and be able to be on top of it. The Great Divorce. There it is. Dang it. The Great Divorce is what I was thinking of. And then there's actually, it is some super nerdy sci-fi stuff, but there was this show that came on Netflix called The Three Body Problem that was based on sci-fi trilogy that this Chinese writer had written. It's very dense and very nerdy sci-fi stuff. And so if you hear that and that doesn't sound like it's for you, do not go anywhere near it. But it is, it's not even that it's all that well written. He's terrible at writing characters and dialogue, but the way he takes these scientific ideas and then extrapolates them is so interesting. And so I really have been enjoying that.
Awesome. Well, thanks for the book recommendations. Those will be in the show notes so people can find those and explore them if they want to or not, depending how deep in sci-fi they want to get. But Josh, I want to thank you so much for taking time, sharing your call to ministry and your journey to where you are today.
Thanks for having me, man. It was an honor.
I also want to thank the sponsor for the show. It's Blue Water Free Methodist Church. We're an intentional community reflecting Jesus to our world. And of course, I want to thank you, the listener, for joining us on another episode of the Pastor's Call podcast, where our heart, our goal, and our mission is to encourage those who are interested or pursuing the pastoral call by hearing the stories of those who've gone before. You can find our show wherever podcasts are found. Please do check us out on Facebook and YouTube. Episodes come out every single Wednesday, so please do like and subscribe. Turn on notifications so you know when episodes do come out. And please do share them with people so people can maybe find and discern the call that they have to proclaim the gospel. So in the meantime, share it with your friends, share it with your family, share it with your pastor, and we'll see you in the next episode. God bless.